Monster Man, special episode, Goblins. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, a bonus extra-long episode brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters, and specifically by Patreon backer William. If you would like to be like William and get your own special episode devoted to a monster of your choice, all you need to do is go down to patreon.com/monsterman and back at the $5 level. When you do that, not only will you get a bonus episode, but you'll also get access to lots of other bonus content, including my other podcast, Patron Deities, and periodic bonus episodes that I record whenever takes my fancy. William, thank you so much for your support, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Doing a bonus episode on goblins at once seems like the easiest thing in the world and like an impossible task, because goblins are the most ubiquitous monster not only in Dungeons & Dragons, but in fantasy role-playing. I mean, maybe skeletons. Goblins and skeletons are pretty much your two. That's how you know you're in a fantasy game. But at the same time, it's hard to know what hasn't been said about them already. I thought that what we would do is begin with the goblin of folklore, take a look at the goblin of Dungeons and Dragons, and see what one of them can tell us about the other. In particular, I think what we're trying to do is find a way to give a distinct character to another low-hit die, cannon fodder kind of monster. And I think that there is some inspiration in the folklore that we can use to make goblins in our D&D games more interesting. So what is a goblin? Now, we've covered this kind of folkloric concept before. There is, in the folklore of many cultures, a sort of mischievous spirit. Sometimes benevolent, sometimes malevolent, and usually when it is malevolent, it can be called a goblin. A goblin is a little creature, typically kind of grotesque in its appearance, and it goes around playing tricks on people, scaring kids, taking them away if they've been naughty, souring milk, things like that. And there's no distinction between the mischievous prank-playing goblin or elf or kobold. I mean, ultimately, these are all more or less the same thing. Specific variations of the same general idea of a fairy or spirit that kind of lurks around the edges of human habitation and that can be appeased, you know, with little gifts or a bowl of milk or a piece of bread or baking them cookies or whatever. But if you don't do that, then you're going to be frustrated by the little pranks that they play. And I think that that emotion of frustration is an important part of that story, right? The goblin represents the fact that when you're on a mine or you're in a farm, there are a million little things that can go wrong. You know, a gremlin is a kind of goblin. The gremlin is the mechanical modern age version of the goblin. The fact that when you're dealing with complex machinery, sometimes stuff goes wrong and no one can explain why. Well, on a farm, sometimes, you know, the milk goes sour. The horse is spooked. The plow hits a stone. Whatever it is, goblins are playing tricks on you. Sometimes you get lost. Sometimes you fall down. And sometimes it's embarrassing. So that's the folkloric goblin, a mischievous sprite associated with kind of the edges of human settlement. Maybe a little more horrifying than some of the other ones we've seen, like the Bacon, or the Kilmulis, or the Buka. Its mischief is a little more dangerous than the amusing mischief of some of the others, and goblins could be, you know, associated with some kind of fairy otherworld, maybe. Now, over in Dungeons & Dragons, the goblin is a little bit different. Goblins are almost completely different. They're basically primitive tribal warriors, bands of thieves and marauders who roam the countryside getting up to evil, and like probably specifically petty evil, because goblins aren't all that tough, really. So goblins might be ambushing travelers, stealing livestock, burning barns, living in caves and ambushing people who go through the mountain roads. Goblins are horrid monsters. And, you know, probably the most famous literary goblins are the goblins in The Hobbit. Now, later on, these will develop into the rather more menacing orcs of The Lord of the Rings, which is the same thing, but viewed through a somewhat more serious lens. And I think that that's a distinction that's important, even though, you know, what D&D has done is take goblin and orc and make them quite different. But the two quite different creatures, the goblin and the orc in Dungeons & Dragons, maintain the difference in mood of the goblins and orcs in the work of J.R.R. Tolkien. Orcs are brutish and degenerate. Goblins have an air of kind of slapstick about them, even when they're threatening your life. Goblins neatly fulfill the villain role of bumbling henchmen, familiar from every Saturday morning cartoon. And there's just this periodic reminder that even the bumbling henchman can be dangerous. You might say, oh, as a goblin, I can take a goblin in a stand-up fight. This goblin's not really a warrior. But it might be a murderer. The innocent people in that village might not feel so confident in their ability to take that goblin in a stand-up fight. I think it's important that goblins have no dignity. The goblins are evil, but they're evil in petty, cruel, short-sighted ways. A bunch of mean-spirited, bullying sadists. They are both contemptible and despicable. So the frustrating and irritating, but basically harmless, mischief and menace of the folkloric goblin becomes the crueler and more dangerous behavior of the D&D goblin. Even though they're basically just spear carriers, we can definitely see how they represent, like, one description of goblins that I have always liked comes from, not from D&D, but from Warhammer. Back in the day, I used to play the Empire, that is one of the human armies in Warhammer Fantasy Battle, and there was a line in the entry for the archers. I had a unit of archers in my army, and it was, oh, a farmer will pick up a bow to defend his fields from goblins and other vermin. And I thought that that was a really interesting way to look at it, right? That goblins might turn up around your house almost like a fox trying to get into your chicken coop. That seems to me to be something that almost bridges the gap between the folkloric and D&D goblins. So what then is the connection between the goblin of folklore and the goblin of Dungeons and Dragons? And here I am out over my skis, right? Here I'm just making stuff up, but I submit that they are one and the same. That the relationship between these two is sequential. That once upon a time, goblins lived alongside humans in this kind of symbiotic relationship where they basically lived in a state of perpetual trick-or-treat, getting bowls of milk, crusts of bread, the burnt end of a pie, whatever, in exchange for not playing cruel pranks on humans, and maybe occasionally playing cruel pranks on outsiders, right? To kind of scare them off and sort of help keep the village protected. And that maybe they performed the same function for other things. So like, oh, don't go into that grove, like the goblins will get you. Well, maybe the goblins are basically operating a sort of very low-level protection racket. There's also the idea of the goblin market, right? I mean, if we assume that goblins are light-fingered thieves and sort of every time you put something down and then you're sure it was there a minute ago, that's probably because some goblins have grabbed it. Well, that kind of stuff might turn up at a goblin market. So once upon a time, goblins were the fairy tale goblins. They lived alongside humans, they were a gosh darn nuisance, but also they maybe had their uses and they weren't so bad. So what happened? Where were these goblins radicalized? Something took these mischievous, maybe spiteful, rather like emotional creatures, because goblins seem to have that quality of fairy tales where characters are very emotional, prone to panic and tantrums, to declarations of loyalty, and to acts of petty, spiteful malice. I think that's how Moorcock described characters in Tolkien, which is rather unfair, but never mind. Someone took these childlike creatures and put spears in their hands, and all of a sudden, it was Lord of the Flies. What would once have been the ordinary nickel-and-dime bullying of the goblins turned into something very deadly. And I think that this ties in with the idea of goblins as henchmen. If goblins are the hapless yet menacing minions of some higher power, some evil high priest, some hobgoblin warlord, actually, no hobgoblin warlord would offend his own dignity like that, but some evil high priest, some malevolent spirit, some risen dark lord, whatever, has taken the goblins and just twisted them that little bit, right? Taken their spirit of mischief and spite that was already there and turned it into an opportunity for sadism, theft, intimidation. Someone armed them. Maybe it wasn't a someone at all. Maybe there's some malevolent magical energy that is leaking out from some tomb that some power-mad fools have opened up, or some artifact that fell to earth, or some haunted barrow mound, or whatever it might be, and it's taking the existing tendency of these goblins and just like slightly amplifying it, right? Because goblins were always like mischievous children, like bad little kids with slingshots in their back pockets, only someone's got them amped up on a load of sugar and maybe given them a couple of drinks and a broken bottle. And now, you can imagine regiments of goblins fighting on the battlefield, but I rather suspect that they have to be press-ganged to do that, right? Because goblins are also cowards, so they can be bullied into serving in some Dark Lord's army, but I don't think that that's where they're happiest. I think they're happiest proceeding ahead of an evil host, like leaves blown on the wind in front of it, arriving in villages and burning and looting and terrorizing, but probably not standing shoulder to shoulder in the line of battle waiting for some dwarves to come and crush them with mallets. And the idea of the radicalized goblins presents a couple of additional ideas. It could be that this is something that the heroes of our campaign can effect. I mean, the traditional thing that happens in fantasy bad guy armies is that you kill the wizard and the whole thing falls apart, right? You kill the necromancer and all the skeletons turn to dust. Kill the Dark Lord and all the orcs and whatever go off home and they go live in the woods and prey on caravans and just generally make a nuisance of themselves. Maybe when you catch up with whoever it is that radicalized the goblins, who's influencing them with the blue jewel, or who has persuaded them that, you know, they can reclaim their former glory, or whatever it is, maybe once you take that person out, then humans and goblins can go back to living in sort of harmony. Alternatively, maybe it's the other way around. Maybe the goblins were once this scourge on the lands of men, and now everybody knows that they are just these goofy creatures that, you know, live in our barns and occasionally scare the pigs, but then something is happening, you know, they're kind of getting their viciousness back. As a dungeon master, the difference between successfully running goblins and successfully running other low HD scrubs is all in the presentation. It's all in the style. One can imagine Tucker's kobolds, you know, the tactical kobold commandos, but you should never have that kind of thing about goblins. Goblins shouldn't use those kinds of simple traps. Very complex and ingenious pranks should be part of the goblin repertoire, and when one of these traps succeeds in hitting the adventurers, the goblins should think that this is hilarious. Nothing makes player characters matter than the high-pitched cackling of these little jerks as you pull poisonous needles out of your backside or whatever. So for that, you need to go and find good inspiration for your goblins. And most obviously, I think, Kevin McAllister from Home Alone is goblin-like. But also, I think you want to go look at, like, classic slapstick. So, like, I think the Three Stooges are a good inspiration for goblins. I said before that goblins have no dignity. Goblins absolutely ride around on pigs just because they think it's funny. Is it in Pathfinder that goblins ride around on dogs? I mean, think that's ideal. I said before that being killed by wolves could be a noble death, but there's nothing dignified or noble about being killed by dogs, even though it's not that far different from each other. So orcs might ride around on boars because they're mighty animals that symbolize aggression. They have razor tusks and mean little eyes. And goblins might ride around on pigs because that's ridiculous. I wouldn't like to get run into by a big pig. They're pretty big. They could knock you down, do you some harm, but it's a lose-lose situation. If you are the fighter standing there in your plate mail, brandishing your longsword, if that pig runs into you and knocks you down, you're going to be the Wally who got knocked into a mud puddle by a stampeding pig. But if you kill it, you're going to be the doofus who heroically swung his mighty longsword and killed a pig. And the goblins should think it's hilarious when you kill the other goblins as well. These little creeps should absolutely delight in anyone's misery, including their own pals. Things that little kids do to their toys, I think, are things that goblins might do to people. You know, they might try to freeze them solid and then hit them with a hammer, which I believe I did to my brother's Star Wars Emperor figure, because we had three of them. You sent away proofs of purchase for them or something like that. They should definitely use things that are completely beyond their control, like starting fires or stampeding animals and then realizing that they don't quite know how those things work, smashing a dam in order to flood a valley and then getting washed away by the flood themselves. That's a very goblin-like thing. You should think of all the things that a medieval or pseudo-medieval society needs to function, and then imagine how the goblins could vandalize those. And there's actually precedent for this kind of thing in medieval times. You know, when a when like the Normans decided to devastate part of the country, they knew exactly what they needed to smash in order to inflict maximum economic damage and inconvenience. So that could be anything from breaking mills that people need to grind their flour to killing or stealing working animals. You know, if a farm loses its plow team, that's bad news. Poisoning wells. You should poison wells in the grossest ways possible, right? So you should definitely take the cover off the well, and then this mephitic reek comes out of it, and you realize that it's full of, like, goblin droppings and maybe one dead goblin that fell in. Nobody's going to drink out of that. One of the things that is a staple feature of a lot of Dungeons & Dragons games, but that I think gets repetitive pretty quickly, is the stand-up fight with a load of goblins, right? Goblins, in general, not stand-up fighters, because I think they lack the discipline or sense of, like, community identity to be willing to risk their lives for some greater good. Unless they're more terrified of their overlord than they are of you, of course, but I think in the moment their panicky instincts might tend to betray them. So I think once you've smashed a couple of them into goblin pancakes with your mace of disruption, the others should probably run away. But think about all the ways that you can run away that are frustrating or challenging to player characters. Because I talk about frustrating, we want the characters to feel frustrated, but we want the players to feel challenged. So goblins should be excellent at things like causing diversions, right? The goblins will absolutely light a building on fire in order to make you fight the flames so they can get away or distract you from whatever it is they're trying to do. They presumably opportunistically steal things. If there are people they can carry, like halflings or children, depending on how much kids in peril you want to have in your game, I know some people don't react well to that, and that is their right. They might steal livestock, so you definitely have a situation where the goblins could, like, take a hostage. That's a pretty common tactic, and I'm astonished that more baddies in D&D don't do it. They would do whatever they can to spite you, and I think if the goblin can cost you a couple of gold pieces and make you look silly, then they're achieving their goals. Poison is the weapon of the weak, and there's nobody weaker than a goblin, and I definitely think it's worth investigating poisons that have humiliating or embarrassing effects. So things that make you vomit, for instance, or things that are intoxicating. Those are definitely things that goblins would try to shoot people with their little short bows, and of course they would prick themselves with them like idiots. Basically, anything that makes goblins more than teeny little soldiers is desirable. They ought not even to have the same, like, kobolds were eventually reimagined in D&D with a certain kind of sense of weird nobility that made them pathetically likable, even when they were being little swine. But goblins should just be dreadful little creeps running around committing acts of petty, senseless vandalism. Think of the pieces of human stupidity, short-sightedness, arrogance, greed, and pettiness that have made you the most upset in minor ways, right? Like, a goblin would definitely take up two spaces in the car park. A goblin absolutely thinks that I just need to run into this shop is a good reason to be halfway up the curb with his flashers on. I don't want to call goblins trolls because that has another meaning, but you know what I mean. Goblins basically have the sense of humor of preteens combined with a total lack of moral center and access to cheap, plentiful spears and short bows. I don't know what you were like as a preteen. I'm sure you were lovely. I was fine. I was no more of a little swine than any of the other little swine my age, but I don't think that anybody should have given me a short bow, a crude spear, and a sense of freedom from authority. I think that would have probably ended badly. This may be, now I may be saying all this because I have a particular, like, aesthetic tick. You know how you have certain things that you include in your games over and over again, right? And I mentioned before that one of mine is, this used to be a great civilization, but now they've degenerated into a bunch of primitives haunting their own ruins. That's a common thing that turns up in my games. Well, another one is, ridiculous, 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 brutal, where I set up a situation that just seems absurd on the face, and then, like, partway through, somebody gets knifed. And so maybe I'm just saying that I think this fits goblins really well, because it's in line with my own aesthetic habits. But I really do think it fits goblins. I think goblins are laughable right until they stab you in the foot and pin your foot to the floor, and then you see the pig galloping at you. So my challenge to you, dear listeners, is on Twitter or by email or on the Patreon site, tell me what horrible things goblins should do to people. What's a good thing? Like, if the adventurers just come across some goblins getting up to some hell raising, what ought they be doing? straddling that line between just plundering, like everybody plunders. There's an example of this in a fourth edition D&D scenario. I don't remember the name of it. There are these goblins in it. It's a normal scenario. You got to infiltrate the goblin's base and find the dingus. I don't really remember. I never played it. I just read it. But every time you come across the goblins, they're doing something horrible. Like they're playing some game where they're playing Mumblety Pig, but with a frog or something like that. Or they're playing some horrible gambling game, or they're competing to see, you know, who can like eat the most rat skulls or something like that. They're doing something that's simultaneously gross and stupid. So maybe we could come up with some kind of crowdsourced stupid but cruel goblin activities table, right? Like when you have a random encounter with a bunch of goblins, what are they doing? If you, dear listeners, want to, via Twitter or email or over on the Patreon site, suggest some things that goblins might be getting up to when the adventurers encounter them, or some things that they might do in a fight with adventurers, then I bet we could come up with a pretty good list altogether. To summarize then, I think that the D&D Goblin, certainly in its present form, takes its character and personality from the whimsical mischief and pettiness and spite of the folkloric goblin. And I think it would be fun to include in your D&D game some connection between the two, particularly because by now I think the D&D type goblin is so well known that it essentially has the kind of cultural cachet that the folkloric goblin never had. And I think that the idea that they were once the same is interesting, although again, that may be because I have this thing where I like species that degenerated into monsters, but never mind that. I think that all you have to do to make goblins really fun in your D&D game is maybe just like have one page of notes somewhere where you jot down every petty, stupid piece of slapstick cruelty that this collection of little jerks could get up to. And once you've done that, I think you're ready to go with goblins. This is related to something I've said before about how certain types of combat are more frightening, in that we, most of us, can't really visualize. We don't have a fear of being run through with a lance. So the idea that you're going to get run through with a lance is, you know, dangerous and exciting. But most of us can visualize getting, like, slashed with a razor blade or hit with a big rock. So even though those things are way less likely to kill us than getting run through with a lance, they're more frightening because they're more within our sense of real world danger. And I think that if you arm and equip goblins like serial killers, they're more frightening than if you arm them like little fantasy soldiers. So maybe when I said spears and shortbows, they should have been armed with like rusty sickles and butcher knives and bricks in socks. All things where we can shudderingly imagine what they might do to us. Anyway, that's a tangent, but you know what? It's a special episode. I do those sometimes. And if you have stories of particularly effective goblin cruelty and mischief in your games, I'd love to hear them, and I'd love to hear some suggestions for things you can do with goblins. So William, I hope that you enjoyed this special episode about goblins, and I hope it's given you some ideas for using goblins in your game, and kind of like making them more than the one standard unit of fantasy antagonist that they have an unfortunate tendency to be as written. Once again, thank you very much for your support. Our next episode is going to be a further exploration of the D chapter of Monster Manual 2, so I hope you'll all join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.